Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
You ready, Mace?
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time
for us to. Yeah. What you know about going out, head west, red legs, TVs, all up in the headrest.
Hello and welcome into Sports Saturday. I am Alan Trost. Blake Schneider's back and with me on this beautiful Saturday morning. Much to talk about today, but Blake, first off, happy to have the show back to how it's supposed to be.
Right, we're getting the whole band back together this
weekend. The band back together. How are you feeling?
I feel great.
We were all a little afraid that Blake had the coronavirus for a second, but turned out to be maybe some bad food.
Yeah, I was a little worried at first, too. It turns out I just had some bad chicken. Lasted about 4 total hours. Then I've been peachy keen ever since. So everybody, don't worry. I'm fine. I appreciate all the texts that I didn't get from any of you guys. So thank you very much.
Hey, we're just glad that you were feeling better because that you texted me and it was like, hey, I just feel awful. I don't really know what's going on. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, A, there's nothing worse than when you're at work and you start feeling terrible and there's simply nothing that you can do about it. But B, in this time where when you start feeling ill, the automatic assumption is it can only be one thing. So we're
right.
Very glad it was not that one thing.
Well, it's been pushed. It's been talked about and, you know, emphasized so much that your mind instantly goes to it and you forget, oh, no, you can actually still get either the regular flu or maybe you're just having an off day. Maybe you didn't get enough sleep. Maybe you ate some bad chicken from a restaurant. So I think my inner voice was just like, oh, my God, you should go home now.
Yes.
Because usually I'm not the type of guy that likes to miss work at all or even get sick. I have, knock on wood, have a really strong immune system, so it's not very normal for me. So
uh-huh.
I just didn't feel like myself that morning and was getting a little chilly. So I was just like, dude, I just don't want to chance it around anybody.
Yeah.
I knew that you guys were coming in later, so I wouldn't want the host as well as me to be sick for the show, and you guys wouldn't get to see, you know, listen to any of us for the next 2 weeks, and we just couldn't have that.
No, that would have been worst case scenario. And it makes me think of like all of the memes I'm seeing right now where it's like where you wake up with a scratch in your throat and like are automatically just on WebMD Googling every symptom. I feel like there's new symptoms that come out every day. But
and
hey.
I was going to say it's dangerous when you go to WebMD because you search anything, it just says you have cancer. So.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like, hey, not only do you have the coronavirus, you also have these
cancer.
50 other things.
Yeah,
so,
and kidney stones or something. Something ridiculous. You're like, how do I have all of these?
How do I have all of these things?
I'm dying right now.
Well, you've got two very healthy individuals here kicking things off with Sports Saturday on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Like I said, my name is Allie Trost. Blake Schneiders, you can tweet at us, at Allie Trost, A-L-Y-T-R-O-S-T, and at Wake and Blake. Blake, give it to him.
Wake in Blake. That's capital N, not and, it's an N. Wake in Blake 29. And for those of you who are wondering why it's 29, there wasn't 29 other Wake and Blakes taken. I actually don't even know if there was. I probably should have looked a little harder, but that was actually my college football number. So there you go.
And speaking of football, we will get into some football-related topics. We've got a jam-packed show today, and it's kind of segmented into each hour what we're going to focus on. So at the end of the show today, we'll get into a lot of Sporting Kansas City, some NWSL talk as well. Team reporter for Sporting Kansas City, Carter Augustine, will be joining me to talk about Sporting Kansas City moving on to the knockout round, finishing at the top of their group, what the atmosphere was like down in Orlando after that. And then former intern this summer, Dorian Rushmore, as she's better known of the program, joins me to talk some NWSL soccer to close things out. And we will also hear from manager Mike Matheny following the Royals' opener last night, kicking off their very interesting season, abbreviated to just 60 games. Blake, can you give us a score from that last night?
The Royals lost, unfortunately, 2-0.
All right, very good. So we will hear from manager Mike Matheny. And if we have some time, we'll hear from some players that talked after the game as well. But first, let's get into some kind of fun news that came out this week that I, as I usually do, got into a lot of Twitter conversation about because I'm addicted to Twitter and I like talking and tweeting.
How millennial of you?
I'm very millennial of me. Except, you know what? I will say that I actually was probably one of the very first to ever go on Twitter.
Really?
I had an account in like 2009.
Whoa.
Right when it came out. But I tweeted like the dumbest stuff ever. It was like, Kelsey's coming over.
Woohoo. Oh, so you basically just took your Facebook messages,
yes.
your Facebook posts, and transferred them to Twitter.
Right, because I had no idea what I was doing.
Of course. Well, I don't think anybody did back
then. No one knew. And then actually, even in high school, like people would still use Twitter probably the way that they like now use Snapchat.
Probably.
I'm feeling like I'm dating myself here.
I used to hate Snapchat with a massive passion because in the beginning, it didn't have all these cool features that you could do. You didn't have any like cool facial recognition where you could throw on a little filter or have a cute little dog ears or something.
Right.
It was just strictly pictures. And nobody posted anything worth looking at. So I was like, I already have Facebook. And Instagram had come out at, I think, just a little bit before that as well.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I can already go look at pictures on Instagram. Snapchat is stupid, and you can't even save it. It just goes away. And then if you take a screenshot of it, somebody can see that you did that. So what's the point? And so I was vehemently against Snapchat forever.
And I'll give Snapchat credit. They've gotten a lot better in terms of how they allow you to use the app, because like I remember the thing that would make me so mad about it, and for anyone listening that's like, what is Snapchat? I'm sorry, you can just kind of tune us out here for a second. No, but your kids probably have it, or someone you know probably has it. My mom has Snapchat, but like do you remember it would only let you type so much, and if you ran out of room you would have to finish by like writing with the little marker?
Yes, I do.
Just it was not user friendly at
all. Very basic.
But all of that to say, I was an OG Twitter user at Allie Trost. Somehow secured that handle way back, and now it's mine. It's mine forever. But let's go into some fun Twitter conversations that were happening at the end of this week, and many of them were centered around names and brands and the names that were announced for a few different teams. Some of them in their infancy stage haven't even played an actual game, and then others like the Washington formerly known as the Redskins, now the Washington football team. So let's just go through the list of the team names that came out this week. Washington football team,
mm-hmm.
Charlotte FC, which is going to be an expansion team in Major League Soccer in Charlotte, North Carolina. They actually did an exercise tweeting out like a list of names they were between, and then went with Charlotte FC, which I'll get into because I'm not a huge fan of it. That's neither here nor there. Then Seattle just absolutely crushed everybody announcing their NHL team, the Kraken, which we'll get into because that was a shock one and two. It was like a breath of fresh air. So we'll get into that one. And then the last one, Angel City, the NWSL team that will be coming to Los Angeles. Great name. But that was the fourth and final team name to come out. So, Blake, let's just start initial reactions to some of these names and what your favorite one is on the list.
So my favorite one is easily the Seattle Krakens. I know we and you have both talked about this. The fact that you've chosen a mythical creature, or just a creature, a fabled creature. Maybe he did exist. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe way back in the day, he could have been a dinosaur. Who knows? But just the fact that they chose a cool, like, it's almost up there with choosing, Newtown Loch Ness Monsters or something like that. Like, something fabled like that is really cool. And not only did the name knock it out of the park, but the uniforms and the color scheme that they chose, absolutely beautiful.
Am I allowed to get a hat with their logo on it?
I mean, you are.
I'm a Blues fan. I love hockey. That is the team that I root for, obviously, being from St. Louis. But don't be surprised if you see Allie Trost just adopting the Seattle Kraken out of nowhere, because that branding – and, okay, I'll just say, like, I'm not one to – like, I love sports. I love watching sports, covering sports, talking about sports. But, like, rarely will you see me sporting any sort of like team gear. I just think like a lot of times
as I sit here and wear this Royals jersey.
But like for guys, it's totally different. Like my boyfriend has just about every single sports like hat, jersey, shirt that like you name it, he has it for the teams that he follows. I just think like sometimes the women's stuff just is very clunky. It just doesn't like, but I would wear a Seattle Kraken anything. Like, It is awesome looking. And if you haven't seen it yet, head over to Twitter. Just give it a quick Google search, because I haven't seen a team brand look this modern and like fresh in a really long time.
Oh yeah. I mean, the color scheme I think that they chose was fantastic. They've gotten kind of three different blues going on. They got a teal, a baby blue, and a dark navy blue. And then they've got red trim outline. They got a big, so it looks like an S. It's in the shape of a Kraken-ish, type figure, though. So it doesn't really take away at all from the, I mean, it's Seattle-based, obviously. But it looks really fresh, red outlines. They've got anchors on the shoulder pads. It just looks super cool when you guys go check it out online.
And they incorporated the Space Needle into the anchor.
Yes.
Which is just like such an awesome personalized like city touch, which I think is just so cool. And I love like all of the potential that they have with the brand they created. Like, I really feel like they can do some really fun stuff on social, some really awesome campaigns. Like, they're going to knock it out of the park with what they're able to do with their content, which as we know now is like such a huge part of a team brand, is like what you're able to create out of that brand. So that was by and far, I think we both agreed.
Yeah, like, the hands down, that was my favorite one.
So then that brings us to, let's talk about the Washington football team, because this has been a very contentious topic now for the last few months, and honestly, probably going back even further than that, because they've been getting criticism for this name, for the name, you know, their former name, the Redskins, for a very long time. And at first I was like, the Washington football team, like, even LeBron James was tweeting, like, that's the name you come up with? No way. Like, what?
How lazy does that sound?
And I'll admit, I was kind of in the same boat there, too. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, that's literally a Major League Soccer name. That is what, like, every Major League Soccer team that wants to just stay conservative does. But then the more I thought about it, why pressure them? I mean, this is such a big decision, one. Two, it's happening not by choice, maybe by choice, but mostly because there are so many eyeballs and so many voices telling you you have to change the name. And so it's kind of this rushed process anyway for them. They changed the name. So, like, give it to them that they changed it.
Yeah. When you're pressuring somebody to do something, especially when it comes to rebranding, I mean, I don't think the Seattle Krakens created the Seattle Krakens, came up with the color scheme, the logo, and everything in 2 months. A month.
No.
I mean, so they haven't been given a lot of time. So it's not that I'm, you know, as much as I want to sit here and dog them and go, that doesn't seem proper, because they already have two other names on the table that have been publicly debated. On the interweb, there's definitely been push for a third name. So the two names that have been kind of pulled within the city of Washington or in D.C. have been the Washington Red Wolves, mm-hmm. which could be cool, or the Washington Red Tails, which, if you know anything about the Tuskegee Airmen, they were the first all-black pilot group in the Air Force, or the Air Corps, actually. I don't even think they had the Air Force back in World War II. So those were two cool names. But if you like sports movies, the Replacements have a team, and Shane Falco is the quarterback of the Washington Sentinels. And I personally think that would be an amazing opportunity to incorporate a fandom from a movie mm-hmm. into an actual team name, which is in Washington, which I think everybody would love. Now, all they got to do is get Joe Flacco and then have him change his name a little bit. You know, it'd be great. But no, I think it'd be fantastic to kind of pull that Sentinels name. So they really had three names that I think a lot of people were going for, and they just couldn't pull a trigger. I'm not as big a fan as the Red Wolves names. I mean, I'm sure that would be a really cool mascot and logo to have. Mm-hmm. I'm not as big as a fan of it.
The
I don't think it watches.
Name's kind of overdone.
Yeah,
like,
give me
mythical creatures. Give me the Kraken.
Yeah.
But I think, like, to your point,
the DC Bigfoots, you know, or something crazy. Like, but yeah, the animal thing is a little overplayed. I think they, with the Sentinels, you know, something that makes it really sound like DC, you know,
yeah.
The capital, the military, you know, something that really kind of that they can own, that makes it way more something to the actual city.
I totally agree.
I don't see a lot of Red Wolves in D.C.
Last time I was there, I didn't see a single Red Wolf, and it's kind of disappointing. But no, I don't think, though, that like in them coming out and saying Washington football team is our name for this season, they did say it's just for this season.
Yes.
I don't think any of those three names are off the table. But to your point, coming up with a brand takes time.
It's, yes.
I actually came from the branding world. I was a copywriter turned full-time sports reporter, broadcaster. So I'm very familiar with that world and the process. And the process is very strenuous. I mean, it's strenuous. It takes time. I mean, just the discovery stage of exploring, you know, look and feel, name, image, likeness, all of those things that build a really awesome brand like the Kraken, where you can incorporate the Space Needle and make it very ownable. That's not something that you can come up with in just 2 months. And so I think that the pressure to just pick a new name, it's not just the name, it's the logo, it's the colors, it's,
yeah,
you know, everything going forward, how they build language around that in terms of campaigns they use on social media or how they communicate internally. Washington has a lot of stuff to figure out right now. The name was just one part of it. I think looking at the entire situation, maybe not bad that they're going with Washington Football Team. And it is funny, though, the acronym is just one letter switch between being WFT and WTF. Because it is kind of WTF right now with everything going on in 2020.
I really didn't even think about that, honestly. But no, I think the other thing is, if you rush it and you choose wrong, it's going to be way worse. And then you're just going to have to do it all over again or live with a horrible name that you chose.
And look,
so to kind of put it on the back burner and just say, hey, we already have color scheme. We'll keep the color scheme. We can keep the R on there if that's what we're going with this season. I'm not really sure how they're if they're going to stay with the R for that. So I think to not choose in the long term, even though none of us really like the name, because it sounds like a soccer team to me.
It does.
The Washington Football Club.
Yeah, they might as well just be Washington FC.
Yeah,
and not Washington Football Team.
And I'm also of the idea that, hey, maybe you just drop Washington altogether and call yourselves DC whatever, DC Red Wolves, DC Sentinels, you know, and keep the actual, because you already have Washington of a state, but they're not, you know, they're completely opposite sides of the country. They're not the Washington,
the state of Washington.
They're the state of Washington. They play in DC. So maybe you kind of bring it back to that.
Yeah, I've always actually been kind of confused now that I think about it that they never did incorporate DC into their name. I feel like DC sports teams in general, it's like, I mean, you look at the Capitals, you look at, like,
exactly,
it's just like Washington.
DC United.
I mean, it's just, it makes a bit more sense because you're right. They're not playing in the state of Washington. And maybe, again, that could be another thing that they're deciding, but why be forced to decide that in 2 months, realize 5 years from now that you maybe made the wrong decision? Sports teams don't just rebrand every day. So
the Chiefs have been the Chiefs forever. I mean, for 50 years. And before that, they were the Texans because they were in Texas.
Right.
So it's like,
exactly.
It's
and mostly teams don't rebrand unless they literally move cities or move states.
Yes.
Like, that's the only reason that a rebrand is almost forced. So,
and even then, you have the Raiders who didn't rebrand at all. They moved to Las Vegas. They're still the Las Vegas. They've moved all over. You have the Rams who never changed their team name. They just changed
right.
cities, or the Cardinals or the Colts. So teams don't change colors and names at all very often. So you don't want to rush it.
And the more we're talking about it, the more I'm talking myself into, like, being not mad, but, like, kind of annoyed at people online. It's like, that's the name they came up with. How lazy. It's like, you get, how much time do they have? The season starts in less than 50 days. Well, like, you got to have a team name and brand to put out on the field.
And I'm easily as guilty. Me and you both were just like, what the hell are they doing? And then you're like, wait, now that makes sense. When you really sit down and you kind of, you know, 2 months, 1 month.
Right.
Oh, no, the season starts in how long? Oh, no. I get it.
That's the fun of sports talk radio, though. We get to talk these things out. Before we take a break, the other two names, these are both soccer teams. And the first one, Major League Soccer, one of their expansion clubs, Charlotte FC, had a long list of great name options, one of which, I won't get into all of them because it doesn't matter now. They picked Charlotte FC, the safest choice on the list. But one of the names that they had was Charlotte Town. And I was like, that sounds unique, different. It's like, you don't see, like, the one fault I have with Major League Soccer is that they try and be too conservative and looking at, like, all of the other ways that teams internationally have, like, historically named
That's
themselves.
That's what I was about to ask you. You know, soccer is obviously, you're a huge fan of soccer. I'm not as up to date on all of my soccer stuff like I know you guys are. is that a push to be more recognized on a national stage? Because there is that push that, you know, we know international teams don't look at the U.S. soccer and really think that highly of us. They just don't. Now we've made a huge push to start trying to get more international talent over here so that way we can kind of intermingle and grow not only the population in the fandom here, but also just the respect, period.
Yeah.
So do you think that's almost playing into the international hand, or is it just trying to be, like you said, just conservative all around?
It's a good question because I don't really know the answer. I think it very much so is dependent on who is making those decisions, because I think, like, when you look, like we were talking about with the NHL and the Seattle, like, Kraken, I mean, that's a move that you make when you're trying to, like, make a statement and take ownership of a name. There is simply nothing unique about Charlotte FC.
No.
And you could do, this is what I guess irks me about it a little bit, is that they could have done Charlottetown FC. They could have done something where, you know, you have a unique name, but then you can throw an SC or an FC for soccer club or football club at the end. I don't think that that's like your entire name, but some people like it. I just think it was one of those very conservative decisions, and it almost felt like they put out this list of names and options that they were quote unquote deciding between. To me, if you pick a name like Charlotte FC, that's been your decision the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, why
that
even
was
put
the
out the
first
names?
Name anybody threw out, then you threw out six more, and you at the end of the brainstorm, you guys all came back and said, yeah, so that first one we picked was pretty good, right?
Like this will be a fun social media post. It'll really boost our engagement. Like, whatever.
Well, because even when you take a name like, I remember when Sporting Kansas City came out with their name. I did not like it because I also didn't get kind of the world of soccer at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't a fan. Now I think it's just an interesting name because it's not an FC, DC. You know, you put FC on for football club. Well, we put KC on because that's what we are.
Yeah.
So it's like, it just sounds a little cooler. And then Sporting, you know, originally I was like, I don't get it. I just don't get it. But now I don't have to, just because I think the identity of the club here in Kansas City and how much fandom they've gotten since and just what it represents now makes total sense.
Oh, 100%. And like, it was actually cool getting to talk to some of the people who have been with Sporting for a really long time and were there during the rebrand.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, the company that they hired to do the rebrand had come to them with a different name, like brand identity, and presented that. And they were all like, we don't like this. And that then kind of caused them to all meet back, you know, internally and really try and figure out what they were going for. And then eventually they came to the conclusion of Sporting Kansas City. And now that you see what the club's accomplished and how they've grown into the name, it's perfect. You couldn't imagine them being anything else.
Exactly.
And I love how they still incorporate the really awesome history of the Wizards, because even though they have an entirely new name, they still pay homage to their original name through like fun branding campaigns, like social media stuff online, through cool merchandise.
Do they ever do like retro
do?
Throwback? That's what I was going to say. I was like, I think I've seen like throwback Wizards Night or something. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it's just cool. And then, so the last one, and then we'll take a break. Angel City, Los Angeles, they are getting an NWSL team that's backed by some really badass women. We'll talk more about that at the end of the show with Dorian. But I love Angel City because, you know, Los Angeles, City of Angels. I just feel like Angel is a cool mascot. And I'm saying that somewhat biased because my high school mascot, we were the St. Joe Angels. And so I'm always like kind of going to have a little sweet spot in my heart. Played soccer for the, you know, I was a St. Joe Angel on the field. So I just thought Angel City was like a great short name. It's very unique to the city. It's feminine, which is good for like the NWSL team, but it's also like just kind of straightforward and means business. I just thought it was a great name. It was simple,
well,
but unique. And
with the Angels, you usually think, you know, you with the wings and everything and like fly, it just definitely fits, I think, what they were trying to go for. And and kind of just like the Seattle Krakens, they really hit it on the head.
They totally
did. I mean, it's not, you're not going to sit here and think about it all day long and be like, they could have. No, it just fits. It just kind of makes sense.
100%. So Those are all of the names. Let us know how you feel about them, because this is just our opinion here on the show. But tweet at us, at Alitros, at WakeInBlake29, and let us know how you feel about these names, because, I don't know, it's just kind of a fun, it's very, you know, your opinion is your own opinion, but I think it's a fun discussion. So we're going to take a break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk NFL preseason, and Blake's got some NBA updates for us, some hoops. So we'll be back after this on Sports Saturday. Welcome back here on Sports Saturday. I'm Allie Trost, joined with my co-host Blake Schneiders. We were talking there in the last segment about some team branding things. So, like I said, go and find us on Twitter at Allie Trost, at WakeInBlake29, and tweet at us your thoughts about the Washington football team. Now, Charlotte FC. I was like, there's too many. I was like, North Carolina? No. Charlotte FC, Angel City, and of course the Seattle Kraken. But Blake, I'm going to throw it over to you because you.
Yeah. So we were talking about Sporting Kansas City. We were talking about how they were previously the Wizards. And that got me thinking about last night. The NBA is back. It is in full effect right now. They had scrimmages. I'm excited. They've got, you know, more games to come. And it seems to be going pretty well. One thing that they did last night was try to shuffle in some crowd noise and different camera angles and everything. So that was a lot of new things that we saw last night within the game of basketball. But we were talking about the Wizards. And last night, the Wizards were actually scrimmaging the Nuggets, the Denver Nuggets. And a little bit of local news. The game was good. Wizards ended up losing to the Denver Nuggets, 82-89. The Nuggets won. But local, I want to say kind of legend, mythical.
We can say it.
Yeah, I mean, local, I think we can legend. Say local legend now. Son of Manute Bol, Bol Bol, appeared in last night's scrimmage for the Denver Nuggets. He was the second round, 44th overall pick. So that in the world of basketball, in the world of NBA, that's not a lot of high praise when you get. Yes, he did get drafted. Awesome. That's usually not – usually have like five guys in the draft, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he was picked number 44th overall, he played last night and ended up getting a double-double. He had 16 points, 10 rebounds. He was 2 of 9 for three-point line. He had six blocked shots. Now, if you guys don't know who Bol Bol is, Bol Bol is the son of Manute Bol, like I said, at – I remember meeting Bol Bol when he was 14 years old in McDonald's, okay, right down the street from Bishop Miege. He went to Bishop Miege and played basketball for a few years.
So how old is he? When did he get drafted?
He got drafted last year. I want to say last year. He was originally drafted in 2019 by the Heat. And then I don't think he ever ended up making the squad. Ended up getting picked up by the Denver Nuggets and has been kind of training with them ever since. So last night when they were doing their scrimmage, he was on fire. I mean, he recorded, like I said, he recorded a double-double, six block shots. He was able to hit the three-point line, or the three-pointer, 2 out of 9, but he actually hit another one that didn't end up counting because there was a foul right before he sunk it. The guy is incredible. He's 7'2", 230 pounds, and he can run the floor pretty well. I mean, he showed a lot of versatility last night. Like I said, can drain the three-pointer, has an absolutely massive wingspan. I'm pretty sure his wingspan's around 7'10". Blocked six shots. He blocked a couple shots where he wasn't within 3 feet, 3 feet of the person, but was able to close the gap just by being like a skyscraper.
So how did he fly so far under the radar in the draft?
Mainly it was because he's so tall. He also very skinny originally. Uh-huh. They've been trying to pack a lot of muscle onto him. I think he originally was like 175 pounds. So, I mean, imagine.
Like 7'2".
At 7'2". He's just like his dad. He's a walking bug, stick bug. So, you know, they've finally put some meat on him. So imagine like 300-pound Zion Williams or 280-pound LeBron James going up against a 175-pounder. It's just not going to work out. So I think he had a lot of things that he had to really tune up. He's got really good ball handling skills, and he can shoot the ball. But last night he went off and got so many looks, and the announcers were originally so impressed. The NBA must have been so impressed that immediately after his first game, he got a call for a drug test yesterday. So,
what is in the food down in the bubble? Yeah, like, what is bulking this guy up?
Right? So, they want to know, and I don't think it's because they suspect he is on drugs. I think it's more of the fact that they want to see if he's going to become the next star. Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure they're hoping he's obviously, and that, there's no speculation to say that he is. It's just ironic that they were like, okay, we're going to drug test you immediately. Because I really think that they're going to try to push and add, you know, and try to market Bol Bol as kind of that next Taco Fall, that next skyscraper in the league. Because if there's anything that we love in basketball, it's guys who can dunk the ball and guys who are 19 feet tall.
Yep.
They're, I mean, spectacles. Dirk Nowitzki was one of the first guys who was really like, I mean, he was about 6'11", so he wasn't. I mean, he is very tall. I'm only about 5'10", so 6'11" to me is.
You're talking to someone who's 5'1".
Yeah,
I'm not here to dunk on anyone's height. No pun.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Bradley back in the day, I think was 7'6", 7'7", and but he could. I mean, he wasn't a shooter. He was just a tall body. Mm-hmm. But you get a guy like in there like Dirk Nowitzki who can shoot the ball, shoot the three, dribble, pass, do kind of everything that you need that a guard would be able to do or a small forward would be able to do. So it's very interesting to see guys that height be able to handle the ball so well. And Manute was his father, and Bol Bol can really play like that. So I think they're really trying to, the NBA is really going to start looking at him, and especially if he can be consistent in his play and really show, hey, I'm a double-double type of guy. Because, I mean, when you're 6 foot, or when you're 7'2", and you can just stand up and touch the rim.
Oh my gosh.
He can put his hand above the rim on the backboard. It's insane. So he's going to become good if he stays consistent and they can keep kind of bulking him up, and he can stay injury-free.
Do we know how much weight he's put on since college, and where did he play in college?
So he actually did not play in college. So he played at some prep schools, and then just kind of went straight into getting drafted and getting looked at. He's still not very old, so it's extremely interesting. But yeah,
yeah.
I watched the game last night, and the fact that the announcers just kept saying, oh my gosh, look at Bol Bol. Wow, this kid can really play. A little showing off the versatility, running the court, shooting the threes. It was just funny to kind of see a guy that I remember seeing at 14 years old. When I walked into that McDonald's at 14, I was probably 18, 17 at the time. He was 14 and he was 6'10". I mean, he towered over me.
Well, and it's always.
He was also only 100 pounds, but he was a walking toothpick.
He was literally
toothpick,
a string bean. I can't talk.
String bean.
But it is always so cool to see local Missouri, Kansas, like Kansas City kids go on to make it big. It's just, it's so fun to talk about, you know, for us here. And like, I just started doing stuff in the high school realm and covering some high school football, high school basketball, and to follow those careers of, you know, future stars at like where they start is always really cool. So
I also lied. I totally forgot. I said he did play at prep school. I totally forgot he did play 1 year at Oregon.
Okay.
So he did. I remember. I was like, oh, wait, no, he was a Duck. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he did play at Oregon for one season and then ended up going into the draft. So.
Okay.
All you people who were fact-checking me already, I already know. You don't got to send me mean messages. I know I messed up.
We only want tweets about which team names you like or do not
yes.
like. Do not tweet us otherwise. I'm kidding. Go ahead and tweet us as much as you want. You know I'll respond. I've been on Twitter since 09. I'm a seasoned vet. Okay, but the other thing I wanted to get your thoughts on, because you're big into the fighting scene, and I knew right when I saw this, I literally thought about you. But it was announced this week, Mike Tyson at 54 years old. This man is my dad's age, and I cannot imagine my father going in to or agreeing to an 8-round exhibition match, but that is what Mike Tyson has done, and he will fight Roy Jones Jr. What? Can 2020 just chill? Like,
right.
are we?
2020 took a bat upside the head of everybody, and it has just been punching them in the face ever since.
Or it's making everybody crazy. Like, Mike Tyson, to the point, he's probably just, been in quarantine, he's got cabin fever, and he's like, you know what? I'm back.
He's coming back. Well, it was so funny, because when Mike Tyson retired, he really kind of went out it wasn't good. I mean, it was not in a blaze of glory. It wasn't riding off into the sunset. He actually quit in the middle of his last fight. He threw the towel in. So, and then when people have interviewed him since then, he has said, you know, he just lost it. He even said post fight in the interview, he's like, I just don't have it anymore. I don't want to come back out here and have a fight for the fans if I know I can't. I'm not in it.
Yeah.
My heart's not in it. My head's not in it. I don't have the mentality that I want to come out here and kill somebody. So it was really kind of sad to see the way Mike Tyson kind of faded off. But he obviously had a little bit of shine when he came back and had a cameo in The Hangover.
Yeah.
Everybody, hey, in the air tonight. I felt it coming, man. So he had a little bit of shine back then, and then recently he's been floating it out there that he's been feeling really good. He's been feeling well not only in his body but in his mind. And I think the mental state is obviously the biggest part that we were always concerned of with Mike Tyson was, yeah. Is he okay mentally? Is he there? Is he, you know, is he battling any depression or any, like, you know, he had some substance issues that he was going through, you know, stuff with his wife and his kids. So I think that this time off really kind of let his mind heal. Mm-hmm. And his body heal. And he said, I've got that killer attitude again. I haven't had it in a long time. And he put some videos out on his Instagram the other day. Holy crap. If he hit me right now, I promise you, he'd knock me through that wall right there.
He looks amazing. He has a 50-6 career, too.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
This isn't someone who is going to just lose that. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, if you're that good, you're going to have that. But I love that you bring up the mental side, too, because I think in individual sports, it's so much more important to be so mentally tough. Like, my brother, for example, he played golf in college. And growing up, going to these tournaments, I mean, it's all on you. If you are hitting bad or you, like, your short game is just off, you can't hit your driver straight to save your life, like, that you don't have anyone who can just pick you up. Granted, in college golf, like, you are on a team. Like, if you score poorly, like,
yeah,
you know, other players' scores factor into that, but it's still so individual. And so I always just think that, like, that's an interesting side of it, because I don't know why, when I think of, like, sports mentality, you know, recently, I always just think back to the Super Bowl and Sammy Watkins, wide receiver for the Chiefs, after the game when they were down trailing the Texans 24-0, talked about the mental side. And he was like, look, I'll be honest, I counted us out. I thought we were done. And he said that Mahomes and Kelsey came up to him like, hey, you need to knock it off. We're still in this.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you don't have someone to help keep you in it,
uh-huh,
it's, and you can't personally do that yourself, that's, I have a lot of respect for individual athletes.
For sure.
Because, well, it's so hard.
The mental side is so huge, because in the sports where it's just individuals, you got you got tennis, mm-hmm, individual, golf individual, track individual, wrestling, you know, fighting. You don't have somebody there to pick you up when you're feeling bad, because you also don't have somebody to blame it on,
mm-hmm,
other than yourself. You can't say, I guess you could say, oh, my trainer sucks, but we know that that's not the reason you got lost in that fight. It's because you didn't go out there and do it. Something was not there mentally. A quick little anecdote. When I was younger, I played every sport, ran track, I did wrestling,
mm-hmm,
And I played football, baseball, basketball. I did all of them. So I did team sports and individual. I've gotten nervous before things, but never really that bad. Baseball, football, basketball, was never nervous.
Mm-hmm.
Track and wrestling, those two individual sports, before every single event, or before every single start of the day, before my first race, before my first wrestling meet, I would work myself up into such an anxiety that I would vomit every single time. Before every single race I ever ran, before every single wrestling match I ever had, I threw up.
You literally sound like me before the ACT when I was a senior in high school.
Are you that seat?
But again, an individual act where it's like all on you. But
yeah.
I mean, that's so true. And especially, I mean, because I played really only soccer my whole life. And any individual sport I did, I never took it to that level where I was actually competing. Like, I did a little bit of track or cross country, but I don't think I went beyond just like my freshman year, where I was never like truly competing. Individually at least, and like gymnastics never took it to the level where I'd be individually competing. So I only ever really played soccer, and there were definitely moments you're nervous, but it's different when you are surrounded by, like, you're one player on the field with an entire team.
Yes. Well, it's a lot easier to stay within the mental attitude, because even though you messed up, you come back to the sideline. Let's say it's in football or it's in, mm-hmm, basketball. You got 10 guys patting you on the back going, hey man, shake it off, don't even worry about it, nobody cares, hey, trust,
yeah,
me, we don't care, we're here to. So it's the mental game in the individualistic sport is so hard. So I'm glad Mike Tyson is feeling that fire, feeling ready to get back in the cage. And to go against a guy like Roy Jones Jr., it's not like he's coming in against a slap.
Yeah.
He's coming in to knock somebody around who's also one of the greatest of all time. I mean, like you had mentioned, he's 50-6. Mike Tyson is 50-6. He's not just a boxer that got famous and then he kind of fizzled out and now we're kind of recapturing the glory. This guy was considered the greatest boxer of all time, right next to Muhammad Ali and George Foreman.
Okay, a couple more numbers here. Guess how many of his victories have been knockouts of those 50?
So this might be cheating because I think I saw this the other day. I think of the 50 victories he had, I think 48 of them were knockouts.
Close, 44.
44!
Which, like, still an insane number.
That means pretty much anytime anybody fought Mike Tyson, they had to realize, I'm probably going to get knocked out.
Like, odds are saying that I'm not going to feel great tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm not just going to lose. I'm probably going to get knocked unconscious.
Okay, another... So, you know, we were talking about when he last fought. 2005.
Yeah.
Against Kevin McBride.
Yes.
So it's been a minute. It's been 15 years. So he's had all of this time to, like you had talked about, get mentally right, physically right. That's a scary, I mean, I'm not going to say that he has the edge in here or going into this match, but like Roy Jones, if you're just looking at the numbers and then you're looking at all of this time off where he's been in hibernation, just getting ready for spring. Oh man.
Well, and it's so funny too, because like I said, Mike even admitted in that post-fight press conference back in 2005, that post-fight interview, he said, I took this fight because of the money, not because I was ready. So, if he's, you know, he's had what, 15 years now to get ready. So he's going to step in that cage, and I guarantee he's not going out there to just put on a show with Roy Jones Jr. I think he's going to knock somebody out.
Oh, yeah. Let's make a bet right now.
I'll take bets right now. I've got Mike Tyson knocks Roy Jones Jr. out before the fifth round. Only an 8-round fight.
Oh, yeah. That sounds right.
Only an 8-round fight.
That sounds
right. I think he's going for blood right off the bat.
I'll be honest. I don't watch a lot of fighting. It's not my thing. Steven St. John, our guy on the Border Patrol, huge UFC, like anything in that world, he's like so in touch with it. I mean, same with you, Blake, but like this is a fight like I will probably watch.
Oh, yeah. What we should do is we should get together that night and I'll try to coach you into, you know, and then what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to bring me into the soccer so you can give me the breakdown.
Yes.
Because you know that's my weakness.
We help each other. This is... Friends helping friends.
Of course.
Co-host helping co-host. But now I'm going to turn to you again because having played football, I think a lot of what's going on right now and some of the conversations as the NFL starts getting ready for what is going to be a season with still a lot of question marks around it. And the most recent news that came out is that the NFLPA did tell the players that there will be zero preseason games.
Yes.
Now, on one hand, totally understandable because why put players at an unnecessary risk to contract COVID that would then put them out longer and make them unavailable for games that actually count and actually matter? On the other hand, though, you are putting players at maybe a greater risk for injury because they are not getting that full preseason experience to really help prepare their bodies for what the speed of an actual NFL game is like. You are also taking away a lot of opportunities from young rookies, players that are fighting for roster spots that need that time on the field in preseason to put something on tape and to prove themselves. So when you look at all of the different factors, Blake, what's your take on the zero preseason games? Where do you stand?
So I'm glad you mentioned the chances for getting injury, because I think that actually is one of the biggest misconceptions within preseason. Once these guys get into the NFL, do you know how many hours that they've put in training, going full speed, having actual football games because they've played? I'm sure most of these guys, except if you're a freak athlete like Patrick Mahomes, who really didn't even play until his sophomore year or something, you've played since you're a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
So you've played forever. So I promise you, not a single player, at least who's been in the league already and already has a contract, or, you know, has been 1 or 2 or 3 years deep, not one of them is going to be mad that they're missing the preseason games. And I'll tell you why. You don't get paid for the preseason games. So let's say you did go out there, and let's say, unfortunately, you got injured in a preseason game that you weren't getting paid for. Now the preseason looks a lot worse than what the regular season was going to look like because you were very excited. Now you're going to miss the whole thing because you had to play a game that didn't matter. So I don't think these guys are going to be bad. Now, the people that I think it affects the most are obviously going to be the rookies. that is their time to really finally get in to see the full speed action. So the rookies do actually like those preseason games for obvious reasons. They're getting to know the play call. They're getting the live action speed because there's a bigger difference than saying, oh yeah, I know who Patrick Peterson is, and then lining up against Patrick Peterson and going, oh God, I now know who Patrick Peterson is. Right. He's right in front of my face, jamming me off the line. So I think the rookies are going to be at the biggest detriment, but I just trust that at least within the hometown squad with Kansas City, mm-hmm. I think this is when the veterans become even more important. So instead of having those games to prep, I think the veterans are now going to be prepping the rookies even more to be like, hey, guys, here's the deal. You guys have to be training even harder. You have to be studying even harder. You have to be on your playbooks every single day because you're not going to get a chance to mess it up in preseason. And when you're a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire or Willie Gay Jr., you're not going to get cut right. because you were first and second round draft picks. So you don't have to worry as much. But now – you're not getting the play, so you have to know what you're doing at all times mm-hmm. because if you mess up one or two or three plays in a row, they're not going to put you in the game.
Right.
They just won't. We kind of saw what happened with Darwin Thompson. Not that he truly messed up that much, but they just didn't have faith in him to play, and he got those preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
So I think really the rookies for every team across the league, it's going to hurt them the most. And when it comes to and Pat McAfee, if you guys listen to the Pat McAfee show, former Colts punter, all-pro punter, one of the best to ever do it, he said it really good the other day. You know, he says, when it comes down to, like, the guys who are on the lower end of the roster, most of the time, the team already knows who they want. Those preseason games are actually there to get them film for other teams to poach
right.
them. So it's going to hurt those guys as well because now they're probably not going to have that film that another team – because they're probably not going to make the squad already. It's a numbers game. We already know we're going to have to cut you and bring in a veteran guard who didn't even go through preseason, but we need him to back up because we got two injuries at center or we got an injury at the left tackle or we're missing a wide receiver. We need a veteran safety to come in. So they really do those preseason games to get those guys filmed so that other teams can come in and go, hey, do you have something that you guys can go ahead? We can poach you from this team and you can fit one of our schemes. So I think those are the players that's going to hurt the most. The regular season guys, they don't care. Guys like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, they played so much football in their life, they already know that they're good. They don't care about those games. So I think that that's kind of one of the biggest takeaways people need to understand. And I think it could also keep, you know, some people a little bit more fresh. You know, you might see a couple guys be a little bit more healed because they didn't have to play those a whole month long of preseason games when they had a hobbled ankle. They
right.
actually could just go ahead and wait for a whole extra month, get a whole extra month of physical therapy, get a whole extra month of strengthening it. So I think it's actually going to be better in the long run because the players have been wanting less preseason games for a while.
Forever, yeah.
Yeah. So I think good on the league, especially because that's what the players were asking for.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they were asking for. The NFL and the NFLPA, they always have been a little bit contentious with each other, and they've never really seen eye to eye, so they've always been squabbling. I'm glad they were finally able to come together on one thing. And
right.
both players and the establishment was like, okay, you got it.
Well, and here's the thing. If it was going to come down to money, the NFL is already losing a ton of money this season.
Yes.
Like, this is something that is beyond just a financial loss. It's a huge, huge unnecessary risk for players. I mean, if Patrick Mahomes, for example, contracts COVID, God forbid, and is then out for, you know, if he's asymptomatic, say, what, is that a 2-week quarantine period? Or maybe he is symptomatic, and then maybe he's out longer than 2 weeks. So I just think, like, when you look at the risk, it just was simply not worth it. But to your point, the players have been asking for this for a while, and I'm actually curious to see what this will look like going forward. I don't know if we'll ever see 4 preseason games again
yeah,
after this.
I doubt it, especially because the owners wanted 17 games, a final game added on. So mm-hmm. instead of 16, they wanted a 17-game season. The players don't want that either. But they did just get, at least so far, the exclusion of 4 preseason games. They cut 4 preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
So they might be a little bit more lenient to add on that 17th game if they know they don't have to play 4 games beforehand.
Oh, 100, yeah, absolutely.
Now, not everybody's obviously going to like that. I think a lot of players are like, 16's fine. If, for those who have never played in football, playing a football game is like getting into a car accident every single weekend. That's what you feel like when you're done. So when you hear about these guys and pain management, and whether it's, you know, you've heard horror stories of guys having to load up on drugs or having to do, you know, kind of shady things with the doctors back in the day, or even medicating now with the fact that they're not going to be able to get – they're not going to get tested for smoking marijuana or anything. You know, pain management is a huge deal. So adding – you know, having four games that don't matter to you at all that you don't get paid for and then still having to manage that afterwards, I think the players are definitely going to like that, and it might – kind of grease them up to allow a 17th game.
Well, and to add in that it was passed to expand the playoffs.
Yeah.
Of 2020. So exactly. You know, there's more games. Why have teams play four games that don't count when you could be
playing,
maybe working with them to, yeah, for games that do count. So definitely going to be interesting, but I am incredibly curious, and we'll hear in the next hour from Rick Burkholder with the Chiefs, their director of sports performance or sports medicine and performance, does a ton of great stuff for them. But Andy Reid kind of alluded to it in Chris Jones's press conference last week, which I want to get one thought before we wrap this hour up from you on that, because this is just one thing that stood out to me. We didn't learn anything revolutionary in Chris Jones's press conference. We knew the deal, maybe that we didn't necessarily know where the Chiefs stood, but all of the reports have been saying that the Chiefs wanted to bring Chris Jones back, but the silence led many of us to believe that it wouldn't happen. As we know now, it did. 4-year extension worth up to $85 million, but we'll hear from Rick Burkholder more in the next hour on some of those logistics with their training camp and preseason and how they're going to keep players safe so that they can eliminate the risk of contracting COVID within Arrowhead Stadium, which is where training camp will take place. But Blake, last week on Monday, we got to hear from Chris Jones, general manager Brett Veach, head coach Andy Reid, on the extension for Chris Jones. And, you know, you kind of hear the same things that we heard with Patrick Mahomes. It takes a lot of trust. You know, I thought it was cool that Chris Jones said Patrick Mahomes actually texted him after his deal got done. Like, hey,
did you see the text?
I left some on the table for you. Like, it's, that's awesome. Like, that is something that I just think is so unique to this team, that they have this type of chemistry. But the whole time, everyone's kind of thinking, and there are a couple of questions about this. Yo, you tweeted that you would hold out if the deal didn't get done.
Yeah.
So, like, let's go back to those tweets. Were you actually feeling serious about what you were saying? Like, how, you know, like, that was a pretty bold statement to make. And he was like, don't take my social media too seriously. Hold up. I don't think if you're tweeting that, you don't mean it.
Yeah, so it's funny because when you obviously we love sports. We think it's just a game. Well, this is this guy's job.
Right.
And in the business of sports, it is a business first on the player's end. It's a well, it's a business all around. The NFL is a business. The players are they're treating it like business because that's how they make their livelihood. We watch it as fans. This is their job. So what I think now, looking back on the whole thing, Chris Jones was obviously doing was basically pushing the envelope publicly. He said, here's the deal. I will hold out, and I'm going to tell you I'm going to hold out. I might not actually have any intention of holding out, but I'm sure deep down there was I think he knew that they were going to get a deal done, but he kind of let out, hey, because you can negotiate behind closed doors all you want, but when you have that field of public opinion behind you and you have all these fans now saying, what, Chris said he's going to hold out? What, you dang owners, you better get something done. Yo, he was using this to push the envelope to say, hey, let's give me my money. What are we doing here? I led the team in sacks the last 2 years. I'm my prime right now. The only guy better than me in my position is Aaron Donald. So I think he was really using social media kind of like a company, or God forbid I have to say it, Antonio Brown does, or Kanye West does. Like, he was using it to really lull them into being like, all right, we'll give you your money.
Well, and the timing on it is a little interesting because he tweeted this on June 30th, and we learned that Mahomes, the agreement kind of happened like 4th of July weekend, I want to say, is when like they officially, even though the announcement came the following week. So the timing there, I think, is what's the most interesting because they were really close.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like, I almost wonder if they're, because we know that And this is what Brett Veach said in his press conference, and what we all, or any logical person, could come to this conclusion. The Chiefs had to figure out Patrick Mahomes' deal before that they could get to Chris Jones. It's like, we know this.
He was the capstone to let all the dominoes fall in place.
Exactly. And so I wonder if, when you look at that timeline, June 30th, and then Patrick Mahomes' deal gets signed, sealed, delivered a few days later, I wonder if there was any point in Mahomes' negotiation that was starting to look like the Chris Jones deal wouldn't be a possibility. I think that what we learned in Mahomes' contract negotiations was, one, they had been going on ever since he was named the starter and ever since he got drafted, really. And then they had to keep going back to the drawing board because he kept doing all of this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So everyone was like, okay, well, he's worth this much. Scrap that. He's worth this much. Scrap that. They couldn't come to a number really until after the Super Bowl, because he continued to reach new heights throughout his first 2 years as a Chief, which is insane. He's done things that no player has ever done in the NFL, no quarterback. So they never really knew that number. Like, as much as the negotiations were going on, I guarantee you so much had to change, like, within the last few months.
Well, it makes you wonder how much Patrick Mahomes negotiated his contract on behalf of Chris Jones. You know what I mean? Like, he had Chris in mind, so he said, okay, how far can I push this out with, I don't want to leave Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I want to stay here, but I also want the players around me to stay here, because we got a lot of young guys. Tyreek Hill, me, Mecole Hardman, Damian Williams, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Travis Kelce, Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark. I mean, all these guys are under 20, besides Travis, all these guys are under 27 or 28.
Yeah. No, I think that, like, the average age of,
like, 25,
of the offense is something crazy. It's like 25, 26.
Yeah.
It's super young.
So I think Patrick actually negotiated his contract in hopes of saying, because he texted Chris and said, hey, I left some on the table. Which, when you think about $500 million, you're like, oh, you left some on the table, huh, guy? No. So, because then Chris tweets out what he did. So that means they probably hadn't talked to Chris since Pat signed. But I guarantee, as soon as Chris tweeted that out, either they, because obviously they'd already been in talks, I guarantee they were already in the works or went into the works to finalize a deal right after he tweeted that.
Yeah.
Because Patrick then comes to him and says, hey, man, let's get this done. Can you take this? Can you take that? I negotiated my contract for 12 years for you. So, yeah, I think this was all a big game, a little bit of 4D chess playing by maybe Patrick and Chris for the Chiefs organization to be like, hey, we know what we're worth. We're young guns. Let's get this thing done.
And like you said, it is all about business. These players have to put themselves and their financial, like, stability first. But you also look at someone like Patrick Mahomes, who is so team first. He does put such a premium on winning, and in his mind that outweighs any sort of dollar amount. I mean, maybe not totally, but from everything that he said and what I think has been made very clear by him, his family, and just how he's approached interviews, and not even just what he says, but what he does, right?
Yeah.
And I think, like, to, if you look at someone like that, team chemistry is so important for this team. And you never want those off-field things, whether it's a contract negotiation or, God forbid, other, you know,
legal issues.
You never want those things.
You know, personal issues.
Exactly. You never want that stuff to trickle into the locker room. And to me, I look at someone like Mahomes, and he looks at what puts the Chiefs in the best position to win Super Bowls. And to him, that is keeping talent. And the number one thing that stood out in his press conference, not just keeping talent around him, because it's one thing to keep talent, it's one thing to reward that talent.
Yes.
And I think that the Chris Jones deal was a prime example of what he means by that.
And last thing, right before we go to break, I think there's a big difference between when you look at a guy like Cam Newton or a guy like Dak Prescott. There is a difference between being about the money and then being about the legacy that you leave on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at guys like Tom Brady, you know how many times Tom Brady has taken a pay cut to be, hey, get me this guy, get me that guy. I don't care. I want Super Bowls. I want to be the greatest quarterback to ever live. I'm going to make, you know, I made $50 million. I'm cool. I don't need, you know, $500 million. So the fact that Pat was like, hey, I've already got my money out the way now, and I've worked on my legacy now. I've got a Super Bowl. I've got my money out the way. Let me continue to work on my legacy. So I think there's a big difference between money, guys who chase money, and guys who chase legacy. And I think Patrick Mahomes is the guy who chases legacy.
like Brett Veach said, a legacy deal. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will hear from our manager, Mike Matheny. And that is all coming up on the other side of the break here on Sports Saturday. I'm Allie Trost. That's Blake Schneiders. Hope you're having a good one. We'll be back after this.